Well, happy Independence Day for those of you in the United States. July 4th. Welcome to this short broadcast. I'm Mike Adams here of Brighttown.com and naturalnews.com. And I want to remind you, I did cover this yesterday, but just mentioning, you don't have to go without the joy of, you know, barbecue foods or whatever you want to grill up and consume with family and friends today. You just have to protect yourself with great nutrition, and then you can enjoy that burger. Or, I don't know, that hot dog if you dare, or that barbecue ribs or brisket or whatever. And very simply, all you got to do to protect yourself is, number one, vitamin C counteracts the sodium nitrite cancer-causing chemical in hot dogs. Vitamin C also protects you against the cancer-causing compounds that are formed in burned meat and meat fats. So if something's been barbecued and it's got burnt tips and edges that probably taste really delicious. You can protect yourself from the carcinogens just by taking vitamin C. And take more than just one. You know, take a couple. The other thing you can do, though, is just eat some fresh fruit with natural fruit fiber. Blueberries are outstanding. Fresh blueberries or freeze-dried blueberries, not blueberry juice because that lacks the fiber, but actually have blueberries themselves or an apple or citrus fruit. And have some coleslaw, which is often served with barbecue, and have a salad, and just have a lot of plant fiber and some vitamin C, and then enjoy your barbecue, and you'll be just fine. So enjoy the day with that advice. Now, I've got some other really cool stuff to share with you today. It's not going to be that long. I'll keep it short, but I've been doing a lot of research into chlorine dioxide. And as you know, I've become a strong advocate of chlorine dioxide for lots of uses. And although I can't say that you should use it orally or internally, I do that. I do that because I understand the chemistry and the dosage and all of that. Or at least, I mean, enough to use it safely myself, but I can't advocate that you use it that way. However, chlorine dioxide used topically or on surfaces is truly outstanding. It's one of the most critical molecules in your preparedness kit, or should be in your preparedness kit. And I've seen chlorine dioxide do amazing, amazing things. I've known people who had extreme like root nerve pain in teeth. And they made chlorine dioxide, swished it around in their mouth for 1 minute, spit it out, boom, pain is gone. Now, I can't say it's going to happen in every case, but at least in some cases it does. I've known people who were doubled over with food poisoning and cramping, just extreme cramping, crawling across the floor, and took chlorine dioxide, and within, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes, boom, the food poisoning was gone. I made chlorine dioxide, fed it to my dog recently. I talked about this after she got bit by a rattlesnake and her whole leg was swelling up. It was her right rear leg, and the foot, the ankle, all the way up to the hip was starting to swell. I put oregano on the bite wound. I don't know if it was a rattlesnake, but it was a venomous snake. I don't know what kind of snake it was. But anyway, the leg was swelling up, and I made a special preparation of chlorine dioxide, put it in her water, and encourage her to drink a lot of that water. And within 12 hours, the swelling had gone down by 2/3, something like that. And then the next day it was done. So the chlorine dioxide counteracts venom in the blood, which is backed up by research, by the way. Again, I can't advocate that you use it in this way. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't go to the emergency room. If you get bit by a venomous snake, you should go to the ER. Take a picture of the snake first so that you can tell them what it was, or you can show them. And then go to the ER. I'm just saying that on my ranch, and I live more of a self-reliant, off-grid lifestyle, I use chlorine dioxide as emergency medicine and emergency cleaning, sanitizing, disinfectant, all kinds of things. And it's amazing for cleaning out tanks. If you have animals, you're going to have like water tanks or food tanks or what have you. Chlorine dioxide can be very useful in the dishwasher, by the way, cleaning your dishes and actually sterilizing them instead of using toxic dishwasher detergents. that, you know, I mean, I still use detergent, but I use my own detergent, healthrangerstore.com, if you want the good detergent without toxic fragrance chemicals and highly toxic, you know, whiteners and all that crap they put in dishwasher detergent. Yeah, it's crazy. They put it in laundry too, but I throw a little bit of chlorine dioxide in with the dishwasher, and it gets the dishes extra clean. And there are 1,000 uses for this. It can be used to sanitize surfaces, to clean keyboards, to clean the screen of your mobile phone, to clean doorknobs and whatever. And it kills COVID, by the way. It kills coronavirus, kills, you know, Ebola. I mean, not that Ebola is actually alive, but you get the idea. Chlorine dioxide is one of the most amazing substances on the planet. And I've talked before about how to stockpile it. Well, and that's by stockpiling the raw ingredients, such as sodium chlorite, and then some form of acid. Because chlorine dioxide has to be made when you're about to use it. You can't like pre-make it and store it very effectively. It degrades, especially in the open air. Oh, and by the way, a lot of people use chlorine dioxide. You can find it sold for this. To deodorize vehicles. Yeah, it's wild. They take chlorine dioxide tablets and put them in like a bucket of water and put that bucket of water inside a vehicle for 8 hours, and it just eliminates the odors, like smoke odors. And people use it for emergency cleaning or cleanup after a storm, or people who have like cats that pee on the carpet. Man, chlorine dioxide gets that out like nothing else. And again, 1,000 uses for it. So I was ordering all kinds of different forms of chlorine dioxide, trying to find if there's an easier form rather than just stockpiling the sodium chlorite and some hydrochloric acid. Because I would like a more convenient form, like a tablet, you know, something where you can just put a tablet in a bucket of water and it'll make chlorine dioxide. And I had found that there are a number of sort of like emergency water purification tablets that use some sort of form of chlorine. One of those, a popular brand, which is not chlorine dioxide, by the way, it's called EF Chlor, C-H-L-O-R, EF Chlor. And it's used all around the world. It's used, it's made in India, by the way, in Bhopal, India. Yeah, remember that? And it contains a sodium, what is this, dichloroisocyanurate. Yeah, I think I said that correctly, which is not the same thing as chlorine dioxide. It's not the same thing at all. And it doesn't turn the water slightly yellow either, so it's not the same thing. Now, it can be used. It does purify water, and reportedly it's safe to drink in emergency situations at, you know, certain concentrations. But it's not the same thing as chlorine dioxide. So I was looking around, and I was ordering products to try to find, like, what's actually... Does anybody make a compressed tablet that when you throw it into water, it actually generates chlorine dioxide? Because if so, I think that would be a really critical preparedness item. Now, by the way, I did find the source. I'm going to share it with you here. And we don't sell it. I'm never going to sell it because I've said so many things about chlorine dioxide. And I know that the authorities throw people in prison for selling chlorine dioxide if you talk about various uses for it, you know. I mean, like Mark Grennan and his sons, I think, are still in prison right now in South America. So we don't sell it. I just want to be clear. And I do want to encourage you, you know, do your own research. But I'm going to give you a research page that will blow your mind. All right? Now, bring up a web browser and let me give you the name of a company that has a fascinating data sheet that will blow your mind. And this company sells chlorine dioxide 1 gram tablets that are patented. You throw them in a bucket of water and it releases, it generates chlorine dioxide from this tablet. And it's really, I've got the patent here too. I'm going to tell you about the patent. And it's very cool. This is exactly what I was looking for. Now, again, it's not for oral use. So I want to be clear. We don't exactly know the precise ingredients. We know what they are likely comprised of, which I'll talk about here in a second. But I'm not recommending that you drink this form until we know more about exactly what it's made of. But here it is. Go to the following address. It's SafRax, S-A-F, as in Frank, R-A-X, safrax.com. So go bring that up in a browser. Safrax or Safrax, I don't know, S-A-F-R-A-X.com. And on the top of their page, click on data sheets, okay? Data sheets. And the click on the first data sheet, which is Safrax DSUSA. It's the technical bulletin for North America. Now, and you're going to bring up this document, and it says Safrax technical sheet, chlorine dioxide generating tablets for North America. And the subhead is disinfectant, sanitizer, tuberculoside, virucide, fungicide, algicide, slimicide. Did you know there are slimicides? If you really want to kill slime, like green slime, yeah. And deodorizer. And if you go through this technical data sheet, which I'm not going to do the whole thing with you here, but they have all of the testing of what this destroys. Poliovirus, rotavirus, influenza, rhinovirus, canine parvovirus, you know, feline Khaleesi virus, coronavirus, pandemic H1N1 influenza virus, and just on and on. And plus all these bacteria strains that they've tested, like, you know, Pseudomonas, Staphylococcus, Salmonella, MRSA, which is methicillin-resistant staphylococcus. That's the superbugs in the hospital. You know, it kills VRE, it kills Candida, it kills Listeria, Mycobacterium, on and on and on. And then all kinds of things that it kills out there. And then it goes through all the uses of this substance, which really, these are little 1 gram tablets that just generate chlorine dioxide when you put them in a bucket of water. But you can use it for disinfectant for food processing. You can sanitize like milking equipment, like beverage systems. You can use it in commercial and animal confinement facilities, you know, to kind of clean the area for cows or chickens or whatever. It's used in dental offices and laboratories and hospitals, clinics, disinfecting bathrooms and display screens. It just goes on and on. And there's plant and crop applications in aquaponics and misting systems and commercial greenhouses and so on, clearing out water lines and water systems, you know. This is highly useful. You can use it to stop algae from growing in your HVAC system. You can use it to prevent growth in the water lines in your RV if you have an RV or something, right? You can use it in all kinds of systems, hydroponics, like I said. And it's the same product. It's just these little tablets made by this company called Safrax. And this company basically just sells chlorine dioxide tablets. If you go there and you click shop now, and by the way, they're not a sponsor or anything. I just want to be clear. They're not paying me to say this. But if you go to the Safrax store, they have like 3 different products, which is chlorine dioxide tablets. One's labeled for odor removal. One's labeled as a disinfectant. And the third one's labeled for use in hot tubs and spas. It's all the same product. It's the same exact tablet, just with 3 different, you know, use cases that are labeled. And basically, you can get on their website for $30, you get 500 tablets. And these are effervescent type of tablets. Okay, so each tablet is 1 gram. And I've done this. I have some of their product. In fact, I ordered a whole case of it, by the way, because this is great stuff. And you put 1 gram of it into a bucket of water, and it forms a pretty strong chlorine dioxide, which can be used for all these different things. And it's quite a value, 500 grams of this, 500 little tablets for $30. Like, I am not going to travel without this stuff, let me tell you. I'm going to have some emergency supply of these with me no matter where I go for whatever reason. I mean, who knows? You end up in a hotel room and it stank. You know, you're going to have to maybe have a bucket of water and put a chlorine dioxide tablet in there and try to like deodorize the hotel room or something. I mean, who knows? There's a horrible fungi in the carpets and everything. I don't know, man. I don't like to travel for lots of reasons, but that's one of them. So this company, I think they have a great value. So go there, support them. If you want to get some of the stuff, they even support Amazon Pay. You could pay via Amazon, but don't buy their stuff on Amazon. It's actually cheaper on their website, safrax.com. And if you order a whole case like I did, they give you 25% off. And probably, by the way, they're going to freak out soon and wonder, like, why are so many people ordering this product all of a sudden? Maybe somebody will tell them about this podcast. But anyway, there's a patent, and let me give you the patent number so you can look this up, that gives us a clue as to what's in this. And here's the patent number. You ready? It's 2009, and that's just the beginning of the patent number. It's US 2009-018-5970-A1. It's a United States patent. So you can look that up on any patent website or Google Patents if you want. And it was filed by someone named William D. Sanderson. I don't know who this is, but it's quite possible this person is perhaps associated with the Safrax company, although I'm not totally sure of that. But nevertheless, this patent, which is good till the year 2028, talks about how they make these chlorine dioxide tablets. And as you know, if you're using, you know, sodium chlorite, if you're making it yourself, you're going to use sodium chloride and some kind of acid, like, you know, hydrochloric acid or what have you. So you know you're going to have a chlorite, and you're going to have an acid. But if you just combine those two together, then you get, boom, chlorine dioxide right there. So how do you combine these things in a dry tablet that only activates when it gets wet? Well, that's what this patent describes. And just to break it down for you and keep it short, this tablet consists of a chlorite, which the patent says it could be a sodium chlorite. Well, it probably is a sodium chlorite. But then you need a bromide. And the bromide that's mentioned in the patent, it might be a sodium bromide, a potassium bromide, a lithium bromide, or a calcium bromide, a zinc bromide, or a magnesium bromide. So these are all considered metals, by the way, including sodium. So it's called a metal bromide, but it's not like heavy metals like lead or cadmium. These are you would call them minerals, you know, calcium, zinc, magnesium, potassium, and so on, even lithium. And they are minerals. They're elements, and they're also metals on the table of elements. And then the acids that are mentioned in the patent, it could be sodium hydrogen sulfate, it could be citric acid, it could be malic acid, or tartaric acid, by the way. And so if you combine the sodium chlorite, the bromide, and the acid, then you can create, in certain concentrations, which are not really described in the patent, then you can make these tablets, which is what this company has done. And of course, they know the secret composition and the way to do this to make it, you know, really, really work. And it totally works. I'm really impressed. This is a great product. And I'm sharing this with you because I'm pretty excited to find a shelf-stable form of essentially chlorine dioxide on demand. So I'm going to have these all over the place, let me tell you. Because I live on a ranch, I have animals, you know, and I've been using chlorine dioxide in the water for my chickens and the water for my goats, and the water for my dogs, and so on. And I have, like, water storage containers. And by the way, sometimes the water containers, you know, they'll get algae growing in them. And then I have to pour out the water, you know, clean them out. Well, with using these tablets, I could sort of self-clean them, just toss a tablet in there, and it's going to kill off the algae and keep the water cleaner. And by the way, some forms of algae can be toxic to animals. So, you know, this is a really good thing. It's handy to have. It's a great prepper, first aid item, what have you. And again, 1,000 uses, especially in, I'm going to say, the next pandemic, whatever's coming down the line, whatever they're going to throw at us next, who knows what. I bet you chlorine dioxide, you know, protects you from it. And I'm talking about surfaces. I'm talking about, you know, you can spray surfaces, you spray down the doorknobs and spray down the doors. They were spraying chlorine dioxide all over the place in multiple countries during the COVID panic, by the way. And so, and again, they use it in hospitals, use it in clinics, use it in morgues and everything. You know, it basically cleans almost everything. It sanitizes on contact, dishes, laundry, everything. Now, it can also alter the color of your laundry, so be careful with that. And by the way, this is not bleach. So there are people out there trying to attack chlorine dioxide and say, it's bleach. It's not bleach. Bleach is sodium hypochlorite. That is not chlorine dioxide, by the way. For people out there who don't know chemistry, those are two different molecules. That's why they have different names, you know? So this is not bleach. It's way safer than bleach. Chlorine dioxide doesn't produce all these crazy byproducts that bleach does. So anyway, the naysayers out there are like, you shouldn't use chlorine dioxide. It's bleach, man. It's bleach. But it isn't. I don't know why there are so many morons out there. Well, maybe I do know. I mean, you know, everybody's been dumbed down, it seems, with, well, you know the vectors. I don't have to go into it. But the bottom line is chlorine dioxide is not bleach. And if you're out there spending a fortune on all kinds of cleaning materials and cleaning spray bottles and cleaning solutions and everything, and then this one is a viricide and this one is a sanitizer and this one is a whatever, you know, some like bulk soap and some, let's say, sodium bicarbonate, you know, baking soda, and then some chlorine dioxide, like just like four or five basic molecules can get you through most cleaning and sanitizing tasks around your home, and it'll save you a fortune. Again, you can create 500 giant buckets of chlorine dioxide for $30 with this product. I know. That's a steal. You can also apparently use it to clean your bonus hole. Yeah, if you don't know what the bonus hole is, you need to listen to two podcasts ago, because that's being taught to certain doctors now, the bonus hole. So yeah, you clean the bonus hole. 1,001 uses, it turns out. Yeah, go figure. Now, we're going to move on to some news about France being burned down. But first, by the way, we have our July 4th event taking place right now at healthrangerstore.com. Double the loyalty points, which means essentially you get 10% back on every purchase. There's no limitations on it, no exceptions, everything. You get double the loyalty points, and a lot of items are on sale. Some of them on sale up to 50% off, others at different percentages. So if you go to healthrangerstore.com, and let's see. Oh, healthrangerstore.com/USA. That will get you to the landing page that shows you all the specials and the bonuses and things that are going on there. And that's good only till midnight tonight. So check it out, healthrangerstore.com/USA, and enjoy your July 4th. So I did a little bit of shopping, finally, taking advantage of some of the July 4th sales that are out there, because I've been doing so much work and research and trying things out, I've forgotten to shop for things. Just, you know, things I need. But I would imagine that people in France are also probably not doing a lot of shopping right now because their cities are burning down, or at least they have been for several days. Breitbart reports 1,000 buildings burned and 5,600 vehicles destroyed. That's, wow, 5,600 vehicles have been burned up. That's, I'm sure CNN will call it mostly peaceful. 3,300 arrests. That's in 1 week of the riots in France. Now, these riots are being carried out by mostly migrant youth. So yes, this is the invasion, this is the revolution, the violence against the French people being carried out by the lawless migrant youth who are, I don't know, carrying out basically a kind of a purge. But things are shifting after 7,000 police officers were deployed one night, and over a couple of nights, that kept ramping up to 45,000 police. That's like an army. And still, the police were probably ordered, like, don't actually stop them. They're migrants. They're protected. You know, it's the protected class. You can't say anything bad about migrants, right? But things are changing in France. Apparently, there are some French patriots taking the streets now, waving the French flag and saying, enough is enough. We're taking our country back. And I don't know. Is France going to break down into a civil war type of scenario, or, I don't know, crack down against the uprising? I'm not sure, but Macron is not doing anything useful, that's for sure, because he's a globalist. You know, of course, he probably wants France to burn, and all of his policies invited this to happen, of course. So, you know, no surprise, just recognize that this is coming to more countries in Europe as well as the United States. So be ready for that. Oh, and here's some fascinating news on a slightly different topic. Remember the OceanGate submarine that imploded and killed the CEO of the OceanGate company and four other passengers, some of whom had paid $250,000 each to go commit submarine suicide? And remember how the CEO said he fired the 50-year-old white guy whistleblower engineers because he didn't want old white guys around anymore? And so the engineering didn't happen, or it was like made up, you know, like affirmative action engineering or something. It's just like, let's just get, you know, trendy people to pretend to do math. And then they all died. Well, turns out, here's from the New York Post, OceanGate CEO used college interns to design the sub's electrical system. So this is a whole new thing. Not only did they use used carbon fiber, like secondhand carbon fiber material that was only certified for aircraft, not submarines. It's not certified against compression forces, okay? It was certified against, like, flex forces of aircraft that twist and have harmonics as the wings move and things like that. You know the wings move, right? Have you ever been on a flight? You look out at the wings, and they're, like, flapping up and down quite a lot, you know? That's because, yeah, things move on aircraft. Well, so things have to flex, and that's where carbon fiber is really good. But in a submarine, it's not flapping. It's just getting pushed on by hundreds of thousands of pounds of seawater pressure, you know. And carbon fiber is not made for that. So, of course, it imploded and killed everybody, and then they had to drag it up from the bottom of the Atlantic. At least that's what's being stated publicly. But anyway, the CEO, now dead, Stockton Rush, hired college interns to design the electrical systems, according to an explosive new report. He charged wealthy tourists $250,000 each for dives to the Titanic shipwreck. Quote, the whole electrical system that was our design, we implemented it, and it works. A former intern told the college newspaper, the New Yorker, in February of 2018, quote, we are on the precipice of making history, and all of our systems are going down to the Titanic. Well, he wasn't lying. Your systems are going down all the way to the Titanic. You have made history. Indeed, you have. It's very inspiring. OceanGate's former director of marine operations and chief pilot said the Titan was a lemon and not safe to dive in 2018. Remember, don't drink and dive, the New Yorker reports. This ex-student, Mark Walsh, had been the treasurer of WSU's Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers Club, which, yes, that is a nerd fest, but it's okay, when OceanGate's director of engineering, Tony Nissen, described some of the company's challenges. Oh, yeah, really? Challenges? So Walsh said, this is the student, he said that he volunteered to offer some solutions. And Tony said, okay, you're hired. And then, so Walsh graduated in 2017 with a degree in electrical engineering. No small feat, double E. And he joined OceanGate full-time as the company's electrical engineering lead. So then he was put in charge of the entire electrical system, like right out of college. No other real-world work experience. Like, you would think maybe first you would be, you get some experience designing things for bicycles, you know, things that if they go wrong won't kill people. I'm not saying that the electrical system failed, by the way. Perhaps the electrical system worked just fine until the hole imploded from the carbon fiber failure. So I'm not saying anything bad about this Walsh guy. He might have done his job. But is it really wise to hire people right out of college who have no experience to do your electrical system for something that a craft that five people, their lives depend on this thing working correctly? I mean, it could have been an electrical failure. We don't really know, since all they were able to drag up was like wreckage with supposed human remains in them. But, you know, it's just incredible that the more we find out about OceanGate, the more we find that these decisions were all intentional. I mean, the death of everybody on board was inevitable. It's like they were trying to commit suicide or something. I mean, every decision along the way was a bad decision. I mean, they didn't have the craft certified to this depth. The viewing port wasn't certified beyond, I think, what was it, like 1,300 meters of ocean depth, but they were taking it down to 3,800 meters, right? And I'm not a double E, but I know that 3,800 is larger than 1,300. And I know that pressures go up the deeper you go in the ocean. And if you're on a craft that's rated, the viewport is 1,300 meters, and you're like, ah, screw that, let's just keep going to 3,000 meters, probably bad things are going to happen, especially if you've used secondhand carbon fiber. So anyway, I just bet this Walsh guy is happy that he wasn't on the submarine. Oh, yeah, Mark Walsh, that's his name. So Mark Walsh, not very happy he wasn't on the sub, and probably learned a very important lesson that, you know, hey, don't be involved in projects run by people who aren't very bright about, you know, making decisions about testing and certification and quality control and so on, and rescue operations. There was no rescue operation. They were screwed. They, you know, normally you have a sub and you have a little mini sub that goes with it. You have like a little remote control vehicle that you can, you know, you can cruise that thing around to go to the surface or something, or maybe try to view something that might be a problem, or maybe it has a little arm. You try to reconnect something on the outside, right? But this sub had nothing. This sub, it was just like a suicide container, and that's exactly what happened. So anyway, I hope I'm done talking about OceanGate, because frankly, this guy, Rush, his stupidity frustrates me. And even he's already dead, and he's still frustrating us with his stupidity while he was alive. It's like, my God. And this guy was just begging for it. And I guess he got it. He got exactly what he was begging for. And I hope that we're not going to keep finding more stories about more stupid stuff that he did, but I imagine we will. Because now everybody's digging into the whole history of this guy and every decision at his company. And they weren't good decisions, it looks like. They were not good decisions. No. Now, by the way, I don't know if you know this about me, but when I was taking the college entrance exams in high school, I'm one of the few students in America that aced the mathematics and science sections of the ACT. I also aced the English section, by the way. And I was offered all these scholarships to go to different schools. And I was even offered the ability to go to MIT, the MIT, but I could not afford the living expenses and so on, which were, even at that time, there was a scholarship, but it didn't cover the whole thing. And it was going to be like 50 grand out of pocket, didn't have that kind of money. So I went to universities in the Midwest and was on scholarship there for several years because of academic scholarships. And so I actually do have a really strong math background, believe it or not. And this is why I've understood for many years, and I've mentioned on this podcast, that the speed of light is not a constant. And, you know, people who are brainwashed with their government education, which is a dumbing down, even a lot of so-called high IQ science people, they say, oh no, the speed of light is a constant. It has to be a constant. We've been told it's a constant. It's called C. It's defined as a constant. And of course it's a constant, blah, blah, blah. And I've said for years, you may have heard me say it, no, the speed of light is not a constant. And in fact, when you look at different laboratories that are reporting the measured speed of light all around the world over the past several decades, because, you know, they do measure it and they report it, their numbers don't agree, by the way. The speed of light goes up and down. It fluctuates. And by the way, the way that modern science gets around that is they have a recursive definition of the speed of light. The definition of the speed of light is the speed at which a photon of light traverses 1 meter. But the definition of the meter is how far a photon travels in one particular fraction of a second. So, in other words, the definition of the meter is based on the definition of the speed of light, and the definition of the speed of light is based on the definition of the meter. And so it's all a hoax, it turns out. It's not scientific at all. They just simply stated that the speed of light is a constant. So now we know. There's been a breakthrough, quote, discovery. Well, not a discovery to me, nor to you if you've been listening. But there's a so-called breakthrough discovery, and it's been reported all over the media over the past few days in the science media. Scientists make groundbreaking discovery of low-frequency gravitational waves that create ripples in the fabric of space-time, proving Einstein correct 100 years later. See, Einstein and I agree on this point. Now, if you're still wondering what I'm talking about, space-time, the fabric of space-time, when you have ripples in the fabric of space-time caused by gravitational waves that move, they ripple like the surface of the ocean, it changes the speed of light based on the current distortion of space-time in which you're measuring the speed of light, or what kind of gravity wave happens to be sweeping through your lab or your planet at the moment you took the measurement. So the fact that this new study finds that the fabric of space-time is actually churning like ocean waves all across the cosmos. And these are scientists from the North American Nanohertz Observatory for Gravitational Waves, by the way. The fact that the gravitational waves are churning through the universe means that the speed of light is actually not a constant, that it fluctuates based on the distortion of space-time that you're currently experiencing. So from the story here, there's a news release. The groundbreaking discovery was made by scientists with this nanograv who closely observe stars called pulsars that act as celestial metronomes. The newly detected gravitational waves, ripples in the fabric of space-time, are by far the most powerful ever measured. They carry roughly a million times as much energy as the one-off bursts of gravitational waves from black holes and neutron star mergers detected by experiments such as LIGO and Virgo, etc., etc. You can search for the actual announcements and all this if you want to get into the science. But here's the point. Gravity is not a force at all. Gravity is a distortion of space-time. And so the sun doesn't actually pull the Earth towards it. What the sun does is it distorts space-time so that as the Earth itself feels like it's moving in a straight line, it's actually moving in a curve, an orbit, around the sun, during which Earth and its inhabitants experience no acceleration of gravity because there is no acceleration. We feel like we're traveling in a straight line, but because the sun has distorted space-time so much, that straight line has been curved into a circle. That's kind of a simplified way to describe it. And the reason all of this matters is because you may have heard me say before that the dark side of the moon would be the perfect place to set up a gravity wave detection equipment. And why would you want to set up gravity wave detection equipment on the far side of the moon? Because, of course, their gravity wakes are moving through us all the time because they are wakes from craft that are traveling faster than the speed of light. And so there is, it's called FTL, FTL travel. FTL technology projects a very powerful space-time distortion in front of and around the craft, and then the craft moves through that space-time at multiples of the speed of light without experiencing any acceleration itself. So you don't actually, it's kind of like, remember on the Millennium Falcon and Han Solo and Luke Skywalker, and they would go into warp drive, you know, and then all the stars would go shoo, and they would shoot forth. But they didn't feel any acceleration themselves. Why? Because, well, it's the distortion of space-time rather than actual kinetic acceleration that's bringing them to multiples of the speed of light. Now, this technology exists in the cosmos, and there are almost certainly various craft cruising around our Milky Way galaxy, the spiral arms, and, near our solar system and probably through our solar system that use FTL drives. And FTL leaves gravity wakes. Gravity wakes can be detected using this equipment. In fact, they are detecting gravity wakes or gravity ripples. You could say space-time ripples. Now, they're detecting them by measuring pulsars. Let's see. They're the most powerful ever measured, a million times as much energy as the waves from black holes and neutron star mergers. So pulsars have very strong gravity waves. Well, if you move a craft through the fabric of space-time at multiples of the speed of light, it requires an enormous amount of energy in order to distort space-time, in order to create that effect. That energy is the energy of stars. And the faster you need to move through space-time, i.e. multiples of c, multiples of the speed of light, then the more energy you need to project in front of and around your craft, making a much bigger wake. It's kind of like a motorboat on the lake. So a little tiny motorboat that's not going very fast just leaves a little tiny wake. But a really big motorboat, a super turbo boat with three engines that's going really fast and it has a big hull and everything, it's leaving a massive wake that just spreads out behind it. That's exactly the way gravity waves work, except in three dimensions, not just two dimensions on the surface of the lake, three dimensions. You know, imagine kind of like an expanding funnel behind the faster-than-light spacecraft, okay? So, if we have gravity detection equipment that is sufficiently sensitive, and the far side of the moon, again, would be a great place to put that equipment, then we could detect actual extraterrestrial faster-than-light travel, kind of like a radar system for incoming and or outgoing or craft that are traversing our space. We would be able to pick up their gravity wakes as they move through. And based on the size of those gravity wakes, we would be able to make some guesses about how many times faster than the speed of light these craft are actually traveling, or perhaps the size of these craft, because the larger the craft, the larger the space-time distortion has to be. Now, some interesting things to note about this. There would be, in advanced civilizations, there would be non-occupied craft, which would be very small, little, like, drones. And these drones might be rather tiny, you know, not the size of a giant craft, but could be the size of, like, a shoebox or something. And it could have this advanced technology on it, and using a lot less energy, they could project this shoebox craft at multiples of the speed of light, like 100 C, for example. And what might be in this shoebox? Well, it's kind of obvious, information and energy. They'd be delivering energy to other hubs, forms of energy and forms of information. They'd be delivering that at, you know, again, multiples of the speed of light. But the Milky Way is a very big thing. And even if you're traveling at the speed of light, let me look this up to be sure, but I think it would take you... Okay, so, yeah, I'm looking this up just to get this right. So it's 1,000 light years thick. That's just the thickness. If you think about the Milky Way as a disk, 1,000 light years thick. So if you're traveling at 1,000 times the speed of light, it would still take you a year just to move through the thickness of it. Now, if you're talking about the spiral arms, here it is, 120,000 light years in terms of the diameter, or some, I see some website saying it's 100,000 light years in diameter. Okay, so 100,000 light years, if you're traveling at the speed of light, it would take you 100,000 years to go from one end to the other. That's obviously not fast enough to engage in cosmic communication and commerce and travel and so on. So you need to go significantly faster than that. If you could go 100,000 times the speed of light, then it would take you 1 year to go from one side of the spiral galaxy of the Milky Way to the opposite side, the opposite spiral arm. And that's still a pretty long time as well. And this doesn't even get you into other galaxies, by the way, which you'd have to cross this huge chasm of empty space to get to other galaxies, which can be, of course, many millions or billions of light years away. So the amount of energy that's required to traverse even our own galaxy in a meaningful way is enormous. And there's some math that you can use to calculate this, and you can actually work out the formulas of how much energy it takes to distort space-time. And you can see this out there. There's papers on the theory of warp drives and so on. I mean, this I'm not making this stuff up. This is all published science, by the way. And the answer is it's going to take stars full of energy with mass to energy conversion, you know, E equals mc squared. That's mass times the speed of light squared, by the way. That's what the mc squared means, c being the speed of light. So in order to think about it, in order to have an extraterrestrial civilization that can traverse the universe in a timely manner, you would need to consume stars. Stars are your energy source, at least as best we can figure out right now. So you would have to consume stars or harvest energy from stars. And I talked about this in a lecture that I gave in 2019, the Oblivion Agenda lecture, by the way. But there are certain types of stars that are giving off an enormous amount of energy, such as pulsars and, you know, quasars and what have you, that are already out there, and you can build energy harvesting structures around them to actually gather that energy, kind of like a giant spherical solar dome of sorts. I mean, that's a simplified version. But you can collect that energy and you can store it in certain kinds of exotic elements that using physics that we don't understand yet on Earth. But you can store star energy in a very small amount of space. Like, think of in Star Trek the dilithium crystals, let's say. And, you know, you can have a little power pod that's the size of like a mason jar that might have the energy of a star in it. And then that can be used to power ships that project faster than light travel, warp drives, so that you can move through the Milky Way galaxy at, let's say, 1,000 times C or 100 times C for the discount tickets. 1,000 times C or 10,000 times C, that might be the military craft that are expending a lot more energy because they need to get there quickly. But the point is, they're consuming stars in order to power commerce and travel across the Milky Way galaxy. Now, I want to bring your attention, if you're wondering, like, is any of this real or is this all science fiction? No, it's all real. In fact, if you go to the Smithsonian Magazine from December 18th of 2019, there's a story there. It's called A Stellar Mystery. How could 100 stars just vanish? And here's the subhead. A comparison of old and new star catalogs shows that some objects seem to have gone missing. So an international research group led by whoever from the Nordic Institute for Theoretical Physics in Sweden reports something strange in the current issue of the Astronomical Journal. They compare star maps from the 1950s with recent surveys, and they discovered that 100 previously cataloged stars cannot be found anymore. So they went through more records, and they found that, according to a recent sky catalog, the Pan Stars Data Release, DR1, a total of 150,000 objects that existed in older catalogs did not have a readily identifiable counterpart in the new star survey. Even though the Pan Stars data release includes stars that are 5 times less bright than the faintest light sources from the past. So, these stars are vanishing, and nobody on Earth can figure out why. Well, I mean, I can tell you why. They're being used like batteries. They're being consumed as energy sources by the non-Earth civilizations that are consuming stars to power their faster-than-light travel systems. I mean, it seems obvious, actually. And if they consume stars, then it makes you wonder what happens, you know, to the solar systems where there might have been planets around those stars. Oh, too bad. Dead, cold, frozen world with, you know, flinging out into outer space, no more orbiting a star for you. But you might think, well, maybe these civilizations out there would choose stars that perhaps don't have life planets around them. That would make sense, right? If you respect life, anyway. So maybe they would choose stars or collapsing stars, or maybe they could consume, you know, the quasars and the pulsars and the magnetars, which is a type of neutron star, by the way. And they produce a lot of energy. But whatever, they're running around the universe consuming stars to fuel their faster-than-light ships or drones that need to travel faster than the speed of light. And so ultimately, this is what's fascinating, is that as more and more of these civilizations expand across the cosmos, it looks a lot like the Western civilization empires on Earth expanding throughout the past few centuries and chopping down all the trees, for example. Or using up all the coal, right? Wherever we expand, we burn up all the energy and leave behind just a bunch of death and destruction. Well, same thing's happening on a cosmic level. These non-Earth civilizations are running around consuming stars. They are star eaters, in other words. And if they want our star, they can consume it at any time. But probably they don't want our star. They probably want our planet, because our planet's pretty rare in the universe, being that it's the right distance from the sun, has a lot of liquid water, which is, again, pretty rare. It's got a lot of valuable minerals. It has an atmosphere that's about 79% nitrogen and roughly less than 20% oxygen, a little bit of argon in there, a little bit of CO2. But it's got a diverse genetic base of plant life and so on, and it's got an orbiting moon. It's got an axial tilt relative to its orbital plane around our main star, which is the sun. And it also has a strong magnetosphere, which protects the life forms on the planet from the genetic mutations caused by exposure to ionizing radiation emitted by the local star, which is the sun, of course. And so you put all this together, you realize that, wow, Earth is really, really valuable. And if a non-Earth species was running around eating stars, they probably wouldn't want to eat our star. They would rather want to, let's say, occupy our planet. Hence, do I have to fill in the blanks? Hence the ethnic cleansing of the planet, the depopulation of human beings on planet Earth. Get it? Yeah, because Earth is valuable because of the properties I just mentioned, whereas the value of Earth outweighs the value of the sun as an energy source, because there are lots of other stars and pulsars and quasars and magnetars out there that they can harvest for energy, but they can't find planets like Earth very often. And so they probably want this one. And so the order has gone out to exterminate humanity. And how do they do that? Very simple. Get everybody to line up and take an infertility death shot. Exotic mRNA technology with nanotech, huh? Wonder where that came from. Think about it, folks. This is not that complicated, actually. If you just think about what's going on and don't listen to the propaganda, it's pretty obvious. Earth has cosmic value, and there are forces that are preparing Earth for a non-human future. And I've given a whole lecture on that. It's called Oblivion Agenda. If you want to look it up on Brighteon.com, it's there on Brighteon. And shockingly, everything I talked about in 2019 is coming true, including the bioweapons depopulation agenda that I laid out in great detail before COVID, by the way. And again, if you're wondering why are stars disappearing from the sky, yeah, they're being consumed as energy sources. Faster than light travel. And then now we have the new press announcement proving that gravity waves are rippling through the fabric of space-time, just like we talked about, just like I said. And if you can distort space-time, you can move faster than the speed of light. You know, relative to somebody else looking at you. You're going to appear to move crazy fast because you're actually distorting space-time. It's not wormholes. It's not black holes. It's not a portal. You're just bending space-time and then riding the bend. That's all you're doing. And to do that, it only requires projecting energy. Enormous amounts of energy, like more energy than has ever been consumed in the history of our planet. We're not talking, you know, kilowatt hours here. We're talking like the energy of stars. But that's why stars are vanishing. So, something to think about. And hey, it's okay if you want to just put that in the category of, oh, that's all science fiction. Go ahead. That's fine. Or if you want to think about, oh, that could be real. Yeah, it's fine. It's okay with me, however you want to take that information and think about it. But I've been thinking about this for quite some time, several years, and it's kind of obvious to me exactly what's happening. Earth is being prepared for a post-human future, and terraforming is taking place on planet Earth. That's what the carbon sequestration projects are all about, to alter the climate in order to make it more hospitable to whatever species plans to be here after they eliminate us, you see. That's exactly what's going on. Dimming the sun. Oh, I didn't even talk about that. So, the Biden regime wants to dim the sun now. It's all official. The UK Daily Mail covered it. Let me bring up that article. You can find this yourself. Remember when they said this was a conspiracy theory? Remember that? Here it is. More gloomy news from Biden. White House says it's open to plan that would block sunlight from hitting surface of the Earth in a bid to limit global warming. The White House has opened the door to an audacious geoengineering plan. I mean, this is mainstream media now. When I talked about this years ago, everybody said, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. It's all made up. Yeah, really? No, it's called terraforming. And it's how you alter a planet to prepare it for a post-human future. This is how you do it. It's called geoengineering. It's weaponization of the atmosphere, altering atmospheric chemistry, blocking sunlight, cutting off photosynthesis. And if you don't have photosynthesis, guess what happens? You have a total collapse of the biosphere because you don't have plants, you don't have aquatic ecosystems, you don't have the microalgae functioning. You don't have animals, you don't have pollinators, you don't have forests, you don't have humans. It's done. It's a reboot of the planet. It's like the great reset of a planet, terraforming. That's what's happening right now. And everybody that's talking about, oh, we got to get rid of carbon dioxide, they are part of the terraforming. They are trying to alter the atmosphere because, I mean, these climate cultists, they're morons, they're idiots, they're, useless eaters, sheeple that go along with whatever stupid idea is pushed on them. And this idea would make Earth a frozen planet, which would collapse the biosphere, collapse human civilization, and it would ultimately eliminate humans, which is the whole point. And these stupid humans go along with it because they're just dumb as shit. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. Sorry about my language. That's just what they are. I mean, these climate cultists, it would be so much easier if they could just fling themselves into outer space and save the planet by removing themselves from it. But no, they're here to destroy the planet. And they're actually working, perhaps in an oblivious way, they're working for non-human forces that want to see humanity exterminated from this earth. That's who they're working for. I mean, whether they realize it or not, that's what they're doing. So all these climate cultists are anti-human, and that they hate humanity. They hate planet Earth the way it is. They don't like warmth. Think about it. They don't like warming. They don't want a warm planet. They want a cold, frozen planet. They don't like liquid water. They want everything frozen. They're fans of ice for some reason instead of liquid water. You can't grow plants in ice. You can't have thriving ocean ecosystems if it's all frozen. These people are idiots. And they don't even know that carbon dioxide is necessary for photosynthesis. They think carbon dioxide is a pollutant because that's what they've been told by their overlords. And, there are times, I admit, it is shameful to realize that we are part of a race of idiots, you know? I mean, think about it cosmically. You wake up, you're like, okay, we're humans here, and the human race is mostly a bunch of idiots. How did this happen? How did we get here? Right? I mean, isn't it shameful to realize that so many fellow members of the same race that you and I belong to, the human race, that they're suicidal, cultist, brainwashed, indoctrinated, gaslit idiots who are committing suicide en masse on a planetary scale to help make sure the Earth is occupied by something other than human beings in the future? Isn't that wild? But that's where we are. That's reality. And these people are killing themselves with the vaccine shots, too. They keep dying off from the vaccines. It's like, man, I never would have thought that you could have just downloaded technology to some planet of a bunch of idiot bipedal organisms and get them to line up and take death shots. But they did it. They did it on Earth. We're watching it happen. It probably happened to people you know. This is like, it's a suicide system on a planetary scale. It's unbelievable. Exotic technology, right? It's wild, man. It's wild. So that's why they pushed everything. All the world leaders, they had quotas for, you know, kill quotas, basically, for their countries. They had to kill off a certain percentage of the populations. Those quotas are still in force. And since the vaccines haven't achieved the kill quotas that they were looking for, obviously, well, guess what? They've got backup plans. They got other ways to kill billions of people. Yeah, weather weaponization, starvation, food failures, shutting down the energy supply, you know, shutting off fertilizer production, nuclear war, radiation, you name it. You know, civil unrest, economic collapse, power grid collapse. Yeah, they've got all kinds of plans. They're going to eliminate billions before this is done. Just understand that you're living in an extermination event. And you got to have a cosmic point of view to understand what's going on here. You have to understand that Earth has value beyond human civilization to understand who's behind this. It's rather evident. So think about that one for a while. Let that kind of bounce around in your thoughts and see where you want to go with that one. But we're not just at war against the globalists who are anti-human and pushing transhumanism and the Satanists, you know, and the pedophiles and the trans cultists and all that. We're at war with entities that want to exterminate all of humanity from planet Earth. That's what you need to understand. We're in it. The extermination has begun. You're watching it. And there are many people who believe that the population numbers being reported right now are largely falsified, especially out of countries like China, that perhaps hundreds of millions, even approaching a billion people, may have already died since COVID began from the bioweapons and the vaccines. And yet there's a massive global cover-up, they say, some people believe, to try to pretend like the population is still 8 billion people. Might already be down to closer to 7 billion at this point. We have no way to know because you can't run around counting 7 billion people. You just have to depend on governments, and the governments are trying to kill everybody. So how do you trust them? Right? Think about it. Shatter the Truman Show, folks, and get out of the dome. You got to open your mind to reality here. You know, it's you're not living in the reality that you thought you were. You're under cosmic attack. The human race is under cosmic attack. And the plans for planet Earth don't include humans in the future. Just saying, okay? All right, that's enough to think about for today. I promised this was going to be short, and I guess I broke that promise. Sorry about that. But enjoy these ideas and celebrate your existence while we still have it. Celebrate the fact that we still have a planet for the moment, because it may not be much longer that it's ours. Who knows? In any case, I will be back with you tomorrow with more information, more interviews, and additional breaking news. Thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com, and also the founder of brighteon.com. Take care.